Hello and welcome back, everyone, to the Hold for Hold Pro Wrestling Channel. We are back. I took a brief break there for a second. Had to do some stuff. Got really busy with, if you don't know, I'm in grad school and I work a couple jobs, so got a little busy there. But I kept up with my wrestling. Believe me, I watch my wrestling. And today, I watch my wrestling. We got to watch AEW Dynamite. And it was actually a really fun show. I was a little worried because the card that was announced didn't have any heavy hitting matches, nothing that was too unpredictable. But every single match delivered, I believe, even the ones that were kind of short. But before we get talking too much about wrestling, AEW, and a couple of little news bits, let's talk about this YouTube. You know, getting the plugs in, essentially. I need you guys to follow the channel, like the channel, subscribe to the channel. We are Hold for Hold on all your social media platforms. And yeah, just help us grow this channel so that way we can be, you know, a bigger community. Watch wrestling together, right? But anyways, you guys, let's start off on a bit of a downer. I have one bit of news to talk about because I thought it was pretty big. And we're going to talk about other news as we get into the show, but right now, Ring of Honor has announced that they are going to be taking a hiatus in the beginning of 2022. So that first couple, I think the first 3 months, 2022, they plan on not running any shows. And along with this, they have stated that they are releasing all of their contracted wrestlers. They're going to continue running shows until December. And then once those December shows are done, their contracted wrestlers will no longer be under contract, and anyone who had a longer contract, you know, agreed upon contract, will be paid through March. So, I mean, it really sucks that this, you know, has to happen in the first place, but at least they're putting their wrestlers in a good place so that way they can, you know, make moves early, plan ahead, and they'll still get paid throughout into March, which, you know, not every wrestling company can do this. And them being able to do that is really good. And I'm excited to see where Ring of Honor goes when they come back. You know, New Japan took a hiatus during the pandemic just because of the laws in Japan and stuff. So them coming back was a nice refresh to the wrestling scene. I think Ring of Honor, they kind of need a reset. And this may, you know, unfortunately, this may be that reset for them. And I have faith that they're going to do well when they come back. Ring of Honor is truly the foundation of modern wrestling. And I mean that seriously. They really created the style that, you know, we see in AEW on a week-to-week basis. And even NXT, WWE, they completely changed the pro wrestling landscape. So I always want to see them do better. And shout out to all the staff, everybody on crew that's on that, you know, going through this, you know, just hope out for the best for everyone involved, and hopefully we can return, get some good whole, you know, get some good wrestling out of this. But anyways, you guys, that's my spiel. That's the biggest bit of news. There's some drama going on in the wrestling landscape that I am going to touch on a little bit, but I wasn't going to do a whole video about. So let's just dive right into AEW Dynamite, because this was actually a pretty decent show. We had a good opener, CM Punk taking on Bobby Fish. I love this story CM Punk's telling in its entirety of him trying to get his, you know, his feet under him, trying to really wrestle his way to the top, essentially. And he's taken on Powerhouse Hobbs and like Matt Sydal, just two distinct styles. And Bobby Fish is another distinct style of wrestler, you know, this submission-based grappler and a veteran, someone who nearly matches Punk in age, but has been continuously working at his craft. So he's just really smooth and really tactical in the ring. So really enjoying this story. I actually wouldn't have minded if Punk lost this match. I'm a big Bobby Fish fan. So I was in the back of my mind, I was rooting for him the whole time. But yeah, early on in this match, Fish gets to working on Punk. They're going hold for hold here. But eventually, Fish leapfrogs over Punk and gets caught into a classic body slam. And Punk starts doing him over and over again. I think he hits three body slams on Fish, which has become like a staple in his matches, which I enjoy. But Fish is able to come back. He just strikes Punk down. He's hitting him with these big leg kicks throughout the match that looked rough. He hits him with strikes. Eventually, he hits a tope, Atomico, you know, from the outside into the inside. Nice little move there. Punk does come back with a nice middle rope dive. A nice dive through the middle ropes. They call it a tope suicida. I don't like that wording. It's just not my thing. You know, the second word in there, I don't like to say. So we get a dive through the middle rope. And JR does have a funny bit talking about, that's how I used to do them back in my day, which, of course, he never did. Fish cuts off any momentum that Punk's trying to, you know, get by just kicking his leg out from under him on the apron, a spot that Fish has been doing on a week-to-week basis, but I always love seeing. So from there on, he's working on Punk's knee. He's putting him in holds. He gets Punk up on the top rope, but Punk's able to fight Fish off that top rope, and he hits a diving elbow, kind of selling his knee too as he hits the elbow. Eventually though, Fish does come back. He's back in control. He's doing some quick strikes on Punk's knee. At one point, he just like smacks Punk's hands out from under him and kicks him right in the leg, and it just looks like it was rough. But Punk does get his rising knee strike in and his short arm lariat. Fish escapes the first GTS attempt with a dragon screw, which was really smart. Punk looks for a jackknife cover, but Fish bridges out of it, which one of my top favorite spots is anyone bridging out of a cover. I just love that. But Punk able to turn around, musters up Bobby Fish for GTS for the win. And he took a minute to get to that pin. He gets to the pin and it's a 1 2 3 1/4, less than a quarter of a second. Fish kicks out at 3, which I love. I love that they're keeping him strong. That Fish would have kicked out of this if it was just like a half second longer of a pin. So yeah, good match, good opener. I will never complain about a Bobby Fish match, and I will definitely not complain about a Bobby Fish CM Punk match. So, and I didn't even mention this. Bobby Fish is heel now. Bobby Fish is a pureborn heel after his last match with, I think his name is Anthony Green, where he kind of beat him down after the match, and then Punk made the save. So we're going to get a heel Bobby Fish in AEW. I'm very intrigued by that. I really want to see him join a faction. I wouldn't mind seeing him in the Pinnacle. I think he's kind of a good fit there, but it is a little crowded already. Wouldn't mind seeing if Wardlow gets kicked out, Bobby Fish gets thrown in, who knows? But, you know, that's just me fantasy booking. From there, though, we have a Malakai Black promo. Just really short, really quick. He's in this like moody lighting. He says that Cody's family lost faith in him that night. Or he's made Cody's family lose faith in Cody. And he's made a crowd turn on Cody. And that this isn't about pinfalls and the house always wins. So really just reassuring that this feud is not over and that him losing a match isn't, you know, the end of the world. Which I kind of wanted to talk about that whole thing, but I think I might just save it for Cody's promo because that's going to take a lot of this. So following that, MJF is in action. He's flanked by both Wardlow and Sean Spears, accounta buddies, as MJF put them. So we get a little jobber match here as MJF is taking on Bryce Donovan is his name. MJF goes to give him a handshake. Donovan looks to give, you know, he gives him the handshake back. MJF fakes it out, kicks him in the gut, immediately puts him in the heat seeker, and then a one finger pin from MJF. This leads to MJF having a kind of long promo. I like MJF promos. I just don't need all the crowd rundown. So he runs down the crowd for quite a bit here. But then eventually he does say that he knocked out Darby's creepy daddy, Sting. Says he's going to be the next AEW champion because he is the past, present, and future of this company. This is when Sting's music hits, but MJF reveals that it was a ploy, so they're laughing hysterically. The lights do cut out, and MJF goes, all right, that's enough, Spears. And Spears, in the back, you can hear him go, that's not me, boss. And cut to Darby Allin wearing like an MJF mask backstage somewhere. And then we cut to a JPEG Mafia concert, which I like JPEG Mafia, so that was cool to see, in which Darby Allin has like some guy dressed as MJF or like dressed in an MJF mask. and him and JPEG Mafia drive that guy through a table at that concert. Then Sting is actually there. They cut the lights back on. Sting is in the ring. He hits everyone with the bat. MJF scurries off. He tries to make an escape through the crowd, but Darby's there wearing like an Invisible Man costume. But Sean Spears saves MJF from Darby in like a flash second. It was a really good detail there. Back in the ring, Darby has a skateboard that he put thumbtacks on, of course, and he just starts whacking Wardlow and Sean Spears in the ring with it. And the whole time they're on commentary, you can hear MJF in the background going, "This is BS, Shivani. This is so terrible." And Shivani replies to him, "Go do something about it." And he doesn't. He's a coward. I really like those little details like that. That's something you really hear on WWE, to be honest. And I think it's cool. From there, Darby then officially challenges MJF to a match at Full Gear, which I'm sure we're going to get, and I'm sure it's going to be a good one. They have a lot of stipulations going for this card as well. It's like a street fight. I think there's a couple street fights, so I don't think they're going to do a stipulation for this one, but I wouldn't mind seeing a street fight with these guys, especially after the beatdown that MJF did. But overall, I am enjoying this feud still. The promo went just a little long for me. It was starting to lose me with the whole like crowd stuff. But by the time they actually did the actual action came in, I was hooked. I enjoy it. From there, we have a Britt Baker interview. She basically learns that her match with Abaddon on Friday will be a trick or treat match. She asks, "What's the treat?" And it's that if Abaddon wins this match, she gets a championship match against Britt Baker. This is why you can't take breaks, folks. This is why you can't take breaks, because I cannot talk. But essentially, it's going to be a no DQ match. It's a championship contender match, basically, but just a little bit of a more festive name. So it'll be Abaddon versus Britt Baker. Should be a fun match. Abaddon, I've seen live, and wow, she's scary. If I was a child, I'd be terrified. She's very much one of the scariest wrestlers I've seen. And I hope it's a good match. I've never seen an Abaddon match where she doesn't just squash someone. So I'm looking forward to that, to actually be exposed to her. From there, we have a TNT championship match. Sammy Guevara taking on Ethan Page. Also, if Sammy Guevara loses this match, he is out of the Inner Circle, which I feel like that's a stipulation they've already gone to too many times. I wasn't really feeling it. I didn't think it added any drama to this. And I actually think if they would have left that out, there might have been more doubt in my mind if Sammy was going to retain or not. But overall, it's a pretty good match. We get a hot start. Sammy immediately charges into the ring and starts just wailing away on Paige. And he hits a huge plancha to the outside. Sammy then just continues to whoop him on the outside, brings him back in the ring, and he loses control from there. Ethan comes back after cutting off Sammy on the top rope and hitting like a side slam onto the turnbuckles, which was nasty. We go to a commercial, we come back, they're exchanging forearms, but Sammy makes his comeback with like fast strikes and a springboard cutter, and then a Spanish fly for a very close two. They really milked that moment. Paige goes to the outside and Sammy hits a shooting star press to a standing Ethan Page, and that spot looked crazy. Back in the ring, Sammy reverses an avalanche Ego's Edge into a Hurricane Rana, and we get a roll-up victory from Sammy to Page. So he retains. He's still in the Inner Circle. Like I said, this was a really fun match. These two just really good wrestlers. I just wish there was a little more doubt in my mind that Sammy wasn't going to just retain, you know? But immediately following the match, Paige starts to beat down on Sammy. Scorpio Sky comes out to continue the beat down. The Inner Circle make the save. And the Inner Circle's entire pyro and song plays, which I was like, oh, Lord, this is going to take like 3 more minutes than it needs to. Which it did, because you have to let the fans sing the song, which is fine. It's for the live crowd, but it's just a little too long. Then we get a Chris Jericho promo in the ring. He says that he respects Scorpio Sky for beating him twice, but says that Ethan Page, the only thing you've ever beaten on a consistent level is your meat in that hotel room. And this was actually pretty funny, and Scorpio Sky goes, "No, he didn't. No, he didn't. I was there. I was there last night." which is like, okay. He then goes on a little too long and then eventually just announces that their match at Full Gear, I think it's a 10-man tag, will be a street fight, which should be fun. I think people were expecting a Stadium Stampede match, but I just don't see the top guys doing that. You know, they're MMA guys, and as we've heard from one of the former top guys or whatever, America's Top Team, you know, just how little they actually care about wrestling, you know, whatever. And not to say that the ones that are currently doing this angle feel the same way as that lady, which I don't remember her name because I don't watch MMA, and her comments were really rude. They were just really backwards comments. So, yeah. Anyways, a little tangent there. It's going to be a street fight. Should be fun. I think it's going to be booked to their, you know, to their advantage, I guess, to show off the strengths of the MMA performers in this match. Yeah, should just be fine. I'm over this feud, I'll be honest. I think everyone is. It didn't do anything for me, and it's definitely not getting Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page over. In fact, when Chris Jericho talked about Scorpio Sky beating him twice, I was like, oh my god, that's right. Like, that's just not the same Scorpio Sky anymore. Which really sucks, you know, because Scorpio Sky is such a great talent, period. He should be in the TBS or TNT title scene at the least. And yeah, and Ethan Page is a good talent too. I mean, they're just not getting anything to shine off of here, and they are not a good fit with America's Top Team, to be honest. But that's aside the point. From there, we have a Bryan Danielson and Eddie Kingston promo. They're face-to-face, looking like they're in a garage somewhere with Tony Schiavone. And essentially, Eddie calls out Bryan for saying that he doesn't work hard and talks about, you know, all the struggles he has. You know, he does have depression, and he still makes it every day. And he doesn't want to snap because he doesn't want to go to jail. But it's a really good promo. I didn't write too many notes because I was kind of like, man, this is a weird setting for this thing. So he gets in his face, and then he walks away before Danielson can even say anything. He just walks away. It's like, you could tell it to my back. And Danielson talks about, this is the Eddie Kingston I want to face. This is exactly what I wanted. And, you know, everybody works hard. Everyone has their struggles. Everyone in this country, everyone in this locker room, they all struggle with something. So, you know, to use that as an excuse, blah, blah, blah. And it's good. It's good. This match is going to be good. This match is going to be good. That's all I need to say on that. From there, we have a Lucha Bros interview. Penta, speaking in Spanish the whole time, talks about the sacrifices that they've made to actually become the greatest luchadors of all time, unlike FTR, who are just claiming to be. And then they do clarify that they are going to put their AEW titles on the line at Full Gear against FTR, which, man, that's going to be so good. If you know me, you know I love FTR and the Lucha Bros. So, man, I'm ready for this match. It's a rematch, at least. So yeah, I've been enjoying this feud. I thought they did some great little like bits. What was it, on Rampage or yeah, whatever it was, when they had like MJF and Andrade in the staircase. Like, I think they've had just simple storytelling, and it works because everyone is really good in this feud. So yeah. Anyways, following that, we have the TBS Championship Tournament. Kairi Uchida taking on Serena Deeb. And as we will remember, because we are smart people, Serena Deeb turned heel on Kairi Uchida in their last match. It was Kairi Uchida looking for her 50th win. She did not get it. Kairi Uchida tapped out to like, I think it was the Serenity Lock after like getting her knee smashed in. And Serena Deeb attacked her post-match and even broke that little nice placket that they had for her. For Hikaru Shida, she broke that placket over her. So yeah, we get a heel Serena Deeb and a face Shida, and it's a fantastic match, you guys. This is a pure wrestling match. Crowd was really into it. I was really into it. So let's just start this off, because the finish is really interesting as well. These women, they go hold for hold to start, which is obviously what I love to see. I love to see people go hold for hold. So Shida has control to start, but she loses it pretty early as Serena like bangs Shida's knee into the post, and she's just like smashing it. Shida is able to kind of like tug Serena into the post to create some space. It was a good little spot there. Serena maintains control throughout the entire commercial break. We come back. She makes a comeback with a big vertical suplex. The match really picks up here as these two are countering each other back and forth. This is like just like Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko, fast, quick counters. You know what I mean? It's really good. She hits her sit-out dominator and a sliding knee to the back of Serena Deeb's head, but only gets a two count. Sheeta then looks for a Falcon Arrow, but Serena counters with a dragon screw. Serena takes a nasty spill to the outside at one point, which, yeah, it was nasty. And it didn't need to be. I don't know what happened, but Serena looked like she hit her head on the apron. So Sheeta sees this, goes outside, sets up a chair as she, you know, normally jumps off of it. Serena, too smart for that, again, doesn't let her hit that. So she goes around the corner, and Sheeta just jumps off the steps to hit her with a missile drop kick on the outside. Serena locks in a figure four to Sheeta on the post, which looked rough. She then goes inside. Deebs reverses a knee into a half crab in a perfect transition. It was like knee coming at her. She rolls with the knee and maintains it for a half crab. She sees that Sheeta's getting kind of close to the rope, so she pulls her in and transitions the hold into an inverted figure four, but Sheeta still makes it to the ropes in the end. So Serena teases to hit Sheeta with that plaque, the one I mentioned, the 50th win plaque. She looks at it. She's like, man, I'm going to hit her. So she runs towards her. Sheeta kicks her in the gut, drops the plaque. Sheeta then picks up the plaque and looks like she's about to hit Serena Deeb with it. Ref's looking at her like, don't do it. You're going to get disqualified. Sheeta, level-headed, gives the plaque back to the ref, which great storytelling, because I was like, man, she is going to do it. This is perfect. But no, she didn't do it. Serena then takes advantage of this by poking her in the eye and doing a roll-up. But Sheeta eventually, you know, she kicks out of that roll-up. They roll up again. Sheeta has a deep roll-up for the win. And man, this was a good match, you guys. If you have to just watch one match on the show, this is definitely the one to watch. Post-match, though, Serena Deeb attacks, I think with a chop block, which is just great storytelling, and then goes after Serena's knee with a chair, and then she locks in the Serenity Hold again, the same way she did last time by smashing her knee against the mat. So just a fantastic match. And really good storytelling, simple storytelling as well for the entire tournament, because now Sheeta has, you know, she has a weakness. She has a bum knee. It's kind of like, I think I mentioned this, I think it's the first NXT UK championship tournament where Pete Dunne like attacks the one of the freaking guys that he beats up in the end. And like Tyler Bate ends up going into this and going into the finals with like an injury. I don't know. I don't remember. It was too long ago. But in short, I like this storytelling. It's simple. It's, you know, it gives Hikaru Shida an underdog story, even though she's already been the world champion for, I think, the longest world champion. So yeah, it's good stuff. I want to see them have a third match. I want to see them have a street fight now. Now that they're just getting vicious every time, I'm really enjoying this feud. And it sucks that that's it for Serena Deeb in this tournament, but I'm not losing faith, because I think she's making the most of every single minute of TV time she gets. So I think we're going to see some big things from Serena Deeb in the coming year for sure. Following that, though, whew, you guys, talking a lot is kind of hard. Following that, Lio Rush and Dante Martin, they have an interview. Essentially, I think Matt Sydal's brother, I forgot his name. Matt Sydal's brother is injured, so Lio Rush and Dante can't have that tag team match with them like they originally planned. So instead, Dante will take on Matt Sydal for the third time on Rampage, essentially pushing back Lio Rush's in-ring debut. And Lio Rush just talks about like he should have saw that coming, how unreliable the Sydals are. And that, man, he had a good line, but I forgot. Anyways, this should be a good match. It should be a good match on Rampage. As we know, I'm not the biggest coverer of Rampage unless it's kind of important. So maybe I'll touch on it on Monday, next Monday, but we'll see. But yeah, should be an interesting match. From there, we have Grumpy Jon Moxley taking on the Dark Order's number 10. This match was kind of nasty to watch, to be honest. I was kind of shocked with how violent it was, which I shouldn't be, but like, I don't know. The Dark Order lately has been so goofy that I especially in the main event, that I just didn't expect this level of violence. So essentially, Grumpy John Moxley, he makes his way in. He immediately hits a fast German suplex to 10. And 10's getting built up here during his entrance. They're like, man, he's on 11-win winning streak. He just beat QT Marshall. So I'm like, okay, it's not going to be a total squash because he has 11 wins under his belt. But yeah, Mox hits a fast German suplex, stomps him in the corner. Mox then drives 10 into the steps on the outside and rips open his mask and just bites his forehead so hard that 10 is busted open and he's bleeding a lot. He gets back in the match. He looks to make a comeback and he kind of does a little bit, but it's cut off eventually with a lot of fists to the face and a paradigm shift to end this match, and Mox just walks out of it. This new Mox character is scary. I mean, I enjoyed this match more than the Yuta match because, one, I didn't like that Yuta was just completely squashed. But this one, it was, like, gross. It was like, man, he bit that man open. That's gross. He ate this man. So I enjoy this character. I can't wait to see this Jon Moxley face Bryan Danielson in that tournament because I'm pretty sure that's where it's headed. Although it'd be kind of crazy if Orange Cassidy beats Jon Moxley, wouldn't it be a little like, ooh, that's fun. I don't think it'll ever happen, not in this iteration of Jon Moxley, but anyways, it should be fun no matter what, because Jon Moxley right now is absolutely scary, and they're doing a great job in this tournament of really, like, he's in, he's out, boom. So yeah, when he has a longer match, it's gonna get tense. I think it's gonna feel like you're fighting a horror villain, you know. From there though, we have an FTR interview. They essentially just like, we're the best, period. Tully calls this like a reset, says that this is a reset for the division and they're gonna have those titles back, and they kind of thank the Lucha Bros for like holding on to the titles while they don't have it. And yeah, and Dex says, you guys do a lot of flips, but when we get in that ring, you're gonna have to fight for the first time in your life, which, not really true. Those guys fight a lot, but I don't care. It's FTR. It's gonna be good. It's gonna be a good match. From there, woo boy, we have a long Cody Rhodes promo. All right, this is where I'm gonna talk about a lot here, so let's just prep for that, okay? So first of all, Cody Rhodes' entrance is too long. I forget how his music starts every single time, and then I just get impatient because I'm like, who is coming out? Who has this long of a buildup? And then once I see the chandelier bit starts to lift up, I'm like, oh my God, it's Cody. I like Cody Rhodes, you guys. I really do. I really like Cody. I think he's a great storyteller. But this story right now, I'm not entirely sure he gets it. Like, he says he gets it. He says he gets our frustrations, right? He says, oh, and that's the opener. He opens with, I hear you people. Believe me, I do. And he says that he hears everything, all the chatter online, old men or former coaches yelling at clouds, which I'm pretty sure is just a shot at Eric Bischoff, which, again, I didn't want to talk too much about the drama, but Eric Bischoff had some comments over the weekend essentially saying that AEW doesn't have any right to talk about WCW because they're not competing head-to-head, and that CM Punk's not actually a draw because you look at Rampage's numbers, which he has some, you know, he has some point. You know, I cannot speak to WCW because, yeah, he was competing head-to-head, and the TV landscape was just so different back then, though. It was not what it is today. Entertainment, period, is not what it is today, so to be competing head-to-head with Vince McMahon, I really kind of think AEW is already doing it, but it's in a different avenue there because of just how entertainment is spread out. It's YouTube, it's Twitch, it's everything, you know what I mean? So in that case, I actually do think AEW is competing with WWE head-to-head, but I understand Bishop's point, and he brings up CM Punk not being a draw. I think that's absolutely false. He points to Rampage losing its viewerships after Punk's debut. honestly, I blame that more on the time slot than anything else. And also, 500,000 viewers on a Friday at 10 p.m. is really good. But anyways, that's a tangent. Cody takes a shot at Bishop. At least that's what I think. He then talks about how he could be like someone. You know, he hooked Aleister Black, double underhook, had him hooked, hit him with a Tiger Driver, but he could have hit another move. I wonder what that other move is. It's a pedigree, guys. He's saying he could be like Triple H. He could abuse his EVP powers. This is his words, not mine. He can abuse his EVP powers to the top and hold the world title if he really wanted to. Which this is also a bit that I didn't really get either, is like his sentences didn't flow together very well. It was a lot of buzzwords and they didn't really sync, because after he talks about like how he can abuse his powers, he's like, but I have a lot of shoes to fill. My brother's a Hall of Fame caliber wrestler. My dad, I'll never be able to be as good as my dad, which is like, okay. And then he apologizes to the entire Nightmare family and the fans and Arn for going to Hollywood, which this story of him being to Hollywood is kind of funny to me, because come on, guys, you have a reality show on TNT. That's not being Hollywood. Being Hollywood is The Rock and John Cena and Batista. Like, that's being Hollywood to me. So that whole bit isn't really whatever. But yeah, that kind of is where it ends off for him, and because from there Andrade comes out. So let's just briefly run down what Cody Rhodes said. He says that he hears the people. He says that he could be like Triple H and just bury everyone. He says he had a lot of shoes to fill. Oh, and that he won't turn heel. He just won't do it because he loves the fans so much. And he said, "I'm not trying to pander, but I love the fans too much to ever turn." And then he apologized to the family. It accomplished nothing, I think. Kind of accomplished nothing. He said some buzzwords, you know. It was something. It just lacked substance. I wasn't the biggest fan of this promo. I actually thought he got off to a good start with the whole, you know, he hears everyone. I think the biggest tangent that he went on was the whole EVP part. I think he was trying to be clever about, you know, the backstage rumors of him and the Bucks not really getting along, but I don't think it worked. If he would have cut out that bit, I think it would have flowed better and it just would have worked. It just didn't. From there, though, Andrade comes out. He says that Cody has made a lot of stupid choices. First, that stupid tattoo on your neck, which I tweeted before Andrade said this. I said, Cody needs to apologize for that stupid tattoo. And I pop for Andrade mentioning it. He said, second, getting in my business. He gets in the ring. He drops the mic. The lights go out. Malakai Black appears. He gives some red mist to Cody. It's a beat down, baby. They start beating down on Cody and Arn. Pac does make the save though, which is interesting. I'm not gonna lie. Pac making the save here. He does the crisscross applesauce, middle of the ring, middle fingers, as you will see in my thumbnail. Don't know if this means it's an alliance, you know, between Cody and Pac. Can they coexist, perhaps? I don't know. I don't know what this really means. Pac kind of does need to turn face because the Lucha Bros are clearly faces. And so he needs to kind of complete that death triangle of faces, which, you know. So I don't know. But aligning himself with Cody isn't necessarily the best move for Pac if he's looking for a face turn. I would actually really enjoy to see Cody turn on Pac. I don't think it's gonna happen, but I would love it to. I think it could be a Ric Flair moment, you know, where Pac does trust Cody. Maybe that could be the thing too, is like Pac trying to trust Cody. You know, and making a point like, I don't need you in this fight. I can take on Andrade and Malakai on my own. But he eventually, you know, he trusts Cody. They maybe have a tag team match at Full Gear against these guys, and Pac gets turned on, and Cody does turn heel. But it kind of would be empty because he's still, if he turns heel, who's he gonna fight? You know, he's gonna probably still fight Andrade and Malakai. So I don't know. Not the greatest long-term booking in my head, but man, the moment would be cool, right? Anyways, guys, that's my whole bit about the Cody Rhodes promo. I think they're trying to go somewhere, and I really do think they have some interesting moments here, and I like everyone involved. I love Andrade, I love Malakai, I love Pac, and I really do like Cody. It's just, yeah, they need to do something. It is stale. Cody's character is stale. And they've already kind of killed this Cody going Hollywood bit, you know? And which I thought was going to add some dimension to his character, but they didn't really follow through with it all the way. So we'll see. From there, though, we have our main event, the Dark Order taking on the Elite. It's a mess, guys. It's a really fun match. It's goofy. The Elite are dressed as Ghostbusters. And and the Dark Order is just a mess with their costumes. John Silver's is Bambi. Colt Cabana is just Brandon Cutler. Stu Grayson is Kratos. Evil Uno is a cowboy. There's a horse at one point, but the horse goes back into the pasture. But we'll see him later. So we get a really silly start. Everyone just kind of playing with their props. But the Elite do take control heading into the break. Getting back, or during the commercial break, in picture, Adam Cole gets his smooches from the Young Bucks. Really rude that was in picture, TNT. What was that about? Anyways, so we come back to the break. Grayson makes a comeback. He has a double Pele kick on the Bucks, which is a really impressive move. Then makes the tag to Colt Cabana, who nails a springboard moonsault, which is, I was not expecting that. And then starts hitting like the bionic elbow trio stuff. He then hot tags Silver into the ring, and Johnny is hungry. He goes all over the ring, whooping everybody in sight, but then eventually gets caught with a double super kick and a snap dragon suplex. The match does break down from this point. Everyone's hitting everybody with everything they have. Just an entire mess. Matt Jackson looks for a super kick to, I believe, Grayson, but Grayson ducks it. Matt super kicks the referee. Then Matt Jackson immediately low blows Grayson, and then the Dark Order is kind of like behind Matt, and he doesn't know it, but all three members of the Dark Order get a low blow as well, so we get triple low blows. Towards the finish, the Dark Order trying to make the save, so the two remaining members of the Dark Order, which I forget their names, and the horse try to make the save, and the horse gets into the ring. The other two are kicked off the apron. The horse gets in the ring. The horse eats a low blow, you know, and then gets super kicked. And then a BTE trigger to the horse. And then they lift up the mask, and they're really milking this moment. They're like, we're going to do it. We're going to lift the mask. They lift off the mask, and it's Brandon Cutler under there. Poor Cutler. And he's kind of crying because he couldn't talk. He has his mouth duct taped. They turn around. The Marshmallow Man of the Ghostbusters costume, you know, that the Elite came out with, who we assumed was Brandon Cutler under there. He rips off his mask. It's Adam Page. Adam Page is here. He blindsides Matt Jackson and hits a deadeye on Omega. Silvers hits a spin doctor on, I believe, Matt for the win. Like I said, this was a really goofy match. This was really fun, though, and a lot of good action in here. And the reveal of Adam Page was just really funny. I really enjoyed that. And the horse, the poor horse, the visual of a horse getting a low blow, I found really funny. So, I don't know. Like I said, this Rampage was pretty good. It was, I just wish it had more matches that I doubted. When I was writing these notes, I literally just wrote out who was going to win in every single instance, and I was right 100% of the time. But that being said, we did have a really good Hikaru Shida Serena Deeb match, and I can't complain, man. Overall, I think I'm gonna score this one, right? Let's score it out of 5, you guys. I'm gonna give it 3.5 stars. I would love for one day someone to like compile what I've given these Dynamites, because I feel like the criteria changes quite a lot, but this was a good Dynamite, man. I think it really picked up with that Serena Deeb match. And then the Cody promo, as much as I like didn't care for it, it was entertaining. And I was definitely hooked on every word Cody was gonna say, because like when he started it with the whole, I hear you guys, I was like, oh Lord, he's gonna really try to acknowledge us here. Acknowledge me. But yeah. I think it was okay. I mean, I'm interested to see in where this Pac, Cody, and House of Black stuff goes, you know? So we'll see. Well, anyways, you guys, that's going to do it for me today. Glad to be back in this chair talking to you guys here on the Twitch, twitch.tv/hold4hold if you want to come hang out live while I record these. But anyways, you guys, I'll see you in the next one. Goodbye.